Today's podcast of The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
Climate change comes down to the rich versus the poor? Did you pay your dues? Bishop Desmond Tutu makes the argument in Copenhagen that since the first world helped pollute the third world, shouldn't they pay to clean it up?
For those who think that the rich are going to escape.
Maybe I'll be there to shake your hand. Maybe I'll be there to share the land.
Maybe the U.S., Britain, and others will clean up the land in Africa, South America, and Asia. And maybe they'll shake hands over a deal this week. But maybe not. On The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee from Public Radio International and WNYC.
Good morning. It's Monday, December 14th. I'm Celeste Headlee here with John Hockenberry. And The Takeaway, John, is whether the issue of climate change is going to actually widen the gap between the rich and the poor.
And what does Bishop Desmond Tutu know that the rest of us don't about the rich not escaping?
That's right.
Let's get right to it. Citigroup is close to a deal to be the last of the big Wall Street banks to pay back its bailout money. Our partner, The New York Times, reports Citigroup will sell stock to repay the $20 billion it needed during the financial crisis last year.
And with most of the big banks now out of the bailout program, President Obama may lose some of his leverage when he meets with bank CEOs today at the White House. The president's expected to press them to provide more loans to small businesses. And if last night's interview on 60 Minutes is any indication, he'll appeal to their sense of civic duty.
The people on Wall Street still don't get it. They don't get it. They're still puzzled. Why is it that people are mad at the banks?
Also making its way to the White House today is a new $1 trillion spending bill. It passed the Senate yesterday. It includes budget increases for vast areas of the government and more than 5,000 so-called earmarks spending bills appropriate to individual lawmakers' districts. Those will be very controversial. House Democrats will move on a sizable jobs bill also this week. This comes as Larry Summers, the president's top economic advisor, tells ABC News the recession is over.
We've walked back from the brink. And, you know, forget what we say. Most professional forecasters are now looking for a return to job growth by spring.
Summers argued that the loss of only 11,000 jobs last month, the fewest in 23 months, shows the labor market is healing.
Now to the climate conference in Copenhagen. Energy Secretary Stephen Chu will announce an international plan today to deploy clean technology in developing countries. The $350 million five-year effort includes everything from putting solar lanterns in poor households to promoting advanced energy-efficient appliances. For more details, we have Tom Burke with us. He joins us from Copenhagen. Burke is the founding director of E3G, an environmental policy advisor. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
We've been hearing a lot about this disagreement between first and third world countries. So tell me, what is the divide here? What's the difference between what the third world wants and what the first world is willing to give?
Well, I think there are two things. One is money to pay for adaptation to changing climate and mitigation. And the other thing is they want the developed world to do more to reduce its emissions so that the climate doesn't get worse.
So which one of these, is it money or is it blame that's going to be the deal breaker possibly for this deal happening on Friday?
Could be both, but I think money is the key to the door. If we can solve the money problem, then it gets a bit easier to solve some of the other problems.
Okay, stay with us, Tom. We'll be back with you in just a moment, but first, more headlines.
Iran's foreign minister says three jailed Americans who crossed the border from Iraq will go on trial. Dubai gets a $10 billion lifeline this morning from oil-rich Abu Dhabi, and the first major sponsor has ended its relationship with Tiger Woods. The global consulting firm Accenture says he no longer is the right representative for the company. Wall Street futures are up on the Dubai and Citigroup news. The Dow opens at 10,471, the NASDAQ at 2190. We're going to talk about family life every Monday. How do you deal with stressful economic life when you're dealing with the stress of parenting and young kids? We'll talk about that later this hour. Lady, were you reading my life or what's going on here?
Speaking of stress, we're looking at your life in fine print all this week. After the financial collapse, do you read your credit card statements more carefully or your mortgage statements? Let us know at 8778-MYTAKE or MyTake at thetakeaway.org.
We've all had to look at the fine print more closely. That's what we're talking about this morning.
You You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee.
Good morning. Today is the beginning of the second week in Copenhagen of the International Climate Change Summit. And what they're discovering is that, surprise, surprise, when you bring 192 countries together to try and reach some kind of agreement, they all have different priorities, and it's stalling the agreement talks. We're joined now again by Tom Burke. He's the founding director of E3G, and he's an environmental policy advisor. And also Bjørn Lomborg joins us, director of the Copenhagen Consensus Center. That's a think tank. He's also author of the book The Skeptical Environmentalist. He joins us from Copenhagen. Good morning. Tom, let's talk a little bit about this deal that they're talking about for Friday. When we went into the Copenhagen Climate Summit, everyone was saying that we were probably not going to reach any kind of deal, and we probably wouldn't see anything actually in paper until next year. So what is the deal that we're talking about for Friday?
Well, I think that people have been talking about it happening in two parts, really. A political bargain that will be made in Copenhagen and finished this week, which will set the frame for a treaty that people need to do next year. And hopefully, I think a lot of people are arguing now, has to be done by about June next year.
So this is the political piece of what is essentially an update to the Kyoto Protocol?
No, it's much more than an update to the Kyoto Protocol. It really is a sort of broader treaty that will involve more people and a wider range of issues to be dealt with. So there's an argument about whether to continue with the Kyoto Protocol or not, but what's really under discussion is a much bigger bargain involving, for instance, forests, a lot of other things that weren't dealt with in the Kyoto Protocol.
Bjørn, you're well known for acknowledging that global warming exists, but saying it's perhaps not the top priority in the world, correct?
That's pretty much correct, yes.
So do you think we need to make this agreement, the one that Tom is talking about?
Well, I think, first of all, Tom is absolutely right in his analysis that this is what most people expect will come out. The problem that I have with this deal is essentially it's following the same failed strategy of the last 18 years. It's essentially a lot of promises which we've done for 18 years. We promised a lot of cuts in Rio in 1992, and we didn't do them. Then we promised even grander cuts in Kyoto in 1997, and we still didn't do them. And so coming together in Copenhagen and simply making even grander promises are not actually going to do anything for climate. It's just simply spinning the wheels on the road to nowhere.
All right,
so
Bjørn,
I would suggest we should do something that's smarter.
All right, well, let's talk about that for just a moment. I mean, is that a failure of the promises and the rhetoric of the nations themselves, or is it a recognition that we actually don't have the mechanisms to enforce any promise, grandiose or otherwise?
Whoa,
I think
there.
It's fundamentally
It's not been the failure Bjørn says it's been. There have been significant reductions around the world from what would have otherwise happened, and they've happened precisely because there was an international agreement in place. So it's a bit cavalier to dismiss all of that out of hand and all the things that lots of people and lots of countries have done to reduce emissions.
That's Tom Burke of of E3G, Bjørn.
Yes, and let's just be honest. I mean, here I do disagree with Tom, and unfortunately for Tom, the data is on my side. Fundamentally, if you look at what's actually come out of the Kyoto Protocol, we promised to cut emissions, which would have been the equivalent of cutting 11% of global emissions by 2010. Instead, we'll probably end up cutting about half a percentage point. So we did about 1/20. So I would submit that we've done virtually nothing. And John, to answer your question, fundamentally the reason is that we do not have the technologies to make this cheaply. We can do it very, very expensively, but of course very few nations are going to do that. A few well-meaning Westerners might do it, but we're not going to get most of the world on board for doing a dramatic carbon cut. That's why we should be investing a lot more in research and development into green energy technology, because before it's cheap, we won't get most people to do it.
Okay, Bjørn Lomborg is, of course, the author of The Skeptical Environmentalist, which is what we're hearing from him right now. Tom Burke, do you have a response to him talking about all of our solutions being too expensive?
Bjorn's always picking up the data he likes and saying it shows things, and there's lots of other data that shows different things. The most important piece about saying it would cost too much, the McKinsey's have done an enormous amount of work showing that you get about half of what you need to get at no cost at all, simply by doing the things we haven't been doing to improve energy efficiency. So it would not only be good for the environment, it would also be good for the economy. And actually, because those things that you do are very widely dispersed around the nation, they would create an enormous amount of jobs in the way. Now, that's McKinsey speaking. I'm inclined to think they probably know what they're talking about on this subject.
Tom, are the discussions getting stalled over who to blame? I mean, as you were talking earlier about the divide between first and third world countries, are the third world countries partially trying to say that the first world was responsible for global warming and therefore is responsible for the bulk of the cleanup?
I don't think it's that issue that's stalling the things. I think the issues are really substantive issues that are stalling it. How much money is going to be on the table? What level of reductions are going to be on the table? But certainly there is, people are beginning to maneuver for a blame game. And what's happening from the African countries, and particularly in the small island states, is they're saying, look, what's at stake here is survival. This isn't, for us, a sort of issue about does it cost a little bit more or do we lose a few jobs. For them, it's a real question about whether they can maintain prosperity and security and the stability of the state at all. So they are not so much in a blame game as trying to say, listen, pay attention to us.
So Bjorn Lomborg of the Copenhagen Consensus Center, you heard what Tom just said. Although you feel as this is, perhaps is not the best thing that the world could be working on right now, he says that for the third world countries and developing countries, it's crucial.
Yes, and that is definitely what a lot of developing countries are saying. Clearly, they are seeing this as a gigantic honeypot that they can actually get hundreds of billions of dollars. The negotiator for the African countries actually suggests that we should be paying $2,500 billion a year to the developing world. Of course, that's not going to happen. And the underlying problem, of course, is this really where they need the most money, or is that indeed to deal with the many other problems like malaria, malnutrition, lack of clean drinking water, all the other issues? But let me just point back to say that Tom is also telling us that McKinsey is saying that we could do all of this for cheap or maybe even for free, half of it for free. But, of course, the real point that most economists would make and not a consultancy agency is to say, well, that's why it hasn't happened, because it actually is expensive. And we know most countries realize this is going to be phenomenally expensive. It's not going to be the end of the economy, of course not, but it is a huge outlay.
Okay,
that's why we're not seeing this happening.
That's Bjorn Lomborg. He's director of the think tank, the Copenhagen Consensus Center. For the last thing, Tom, I want you to listen to this cut again from Bishop Desmond Tutu.
For those who think that the rich are going to escape.
He seems bemused by that idea. What does Bishop Desmond Tutu know that the rest of us do not?
I think he's completely misunderstood it. The problem is we won't escape. You know, our economies in a globalized world don't succeed if other economies fail. And if the kind of things that are going to happen with climate change in China, in India, in South America take place, then that will really kick back on us. So I don't, I'm unfortunately agree with Desmond Tutu on that.
Okay.
When it comes to knowing what's good, you know, I'm inclined to believe that the leaders of the African countries know a bit better than Bjorn Lomborg what's in the interest of their people. And they're all in Copenhagen right now saying we want some action on this, and this is what matters to us.
Okay, Tom Burke is the founding director of E3G, and it's 15 minutes past the hour. We're now going to take a look at the headlines.
Pakistani court has stepped in today to stop five American men from being deported. The five are being held on suspicion of having links to Al-Qaeda. The court has put a hold on the men being allowed to leave Pakistan until the judge reviews their case. Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman Mike Mullen is in Afghanistan for a series of meetings with government officials. Mullen's visit comes just as the first of the additional troops promised for Afghanistan are to be deployed. A battalion of Marines will arrive in southern Afghanistan this week. Back in the U.S., Citigroup is close to a deal to begin repaying some of the billions in bailout aid it has received. That's according to reporting from the Wall Street Journal. Under the deal, Citigroup will raise the money by selling new stock.
And President Obama will be talking to bankers and top financial industry executives at the White House later today. They'll discuss issues like economic recovery and small business lending. Then the president will deliver a statement on the economy. That's a look at some of the stories we're covering this morning. Coming up, living in a post-Tiger world. What does it mean for golf with Tiger taking a break from the sport? We'll find out in a few minutes.
Thanks for listening to the Takeaway Podcast. If there's a story you think we should look at or a conversation you'd like us to start, drop us a line at 877-8-MY-TAKE or email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.